Chapter 8. Reimagine Your Temperament. To manage the discomfort that tugs us towards distraction, we need to think of ourselves differently. The way we perceive our temperament, which is defined as a person's or animal's nature, especially as it permanently affects their behavior, has a profound impact on how we behave. One of the most pervasive bits of folk psychology is the belief that self-control is limited, that by the nature of our temperament, we only have so much willpower available to us. Furthermore, the thinking goes, we are liable to run out of willpower when we exert ourselves. Psychologists have a name for this phenomenon: ego depletion. Not so long ago, my after-work routine looked like this. I'd sit on the couch, and I'd veg out for hours, keeping company with Netflix and a cold pint of ice cream. Ben & Jerry's chocolate fudge brownie, to be exact. I knew the ice cream and the sitting weren't good for me, but I justified my actions by telling myself I was spent, acting as if my ego were depleted, even if I never heard the term. This theory would seem to perfectly explain my after-work indulgences. But is ego depletion real? In 2011, the psychologist Roy Baumeister wrote the bestseller Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength, with New York Times journalist John Tierney. The book cited several of Baumeister's studies demonstrating the ego depletion theory, including one notable experiment that showed a seemingly miraculous way to restore willpower: consuming sugar. The study claimed that participants who had sipped sugar-sweetened lemonade demonstrated increased self-control and stamina on difficult tasks. Recently, however, scientists have examined the theory more critically, and several have soured on the idea. Evan Carter at the University of Miami was one of the first to challenge Baumeister's findings. In a 2010 meta-analysis, a study of studies, Carter looked at nearly 200 experiments that concluded ego depletion was real. But upon closer inspection, however, he identified a publication bias, in which studies that produced contradictory evidence were not included. When factoring in their results, he concluded that there was no firm evidence supporting the ego depletion theory. Furthermore, some of the more magical aspects of the theory, like the idea that sugar can increase willpower, have been thoroughly debunked. What might explain the ego depletion phenomenon? The results of early studies may have been authentic, but it appears the researchers jumped to the wrong conclusions. New studies show that drinking lemonade can improve performance, but not for the reason Baumeister believed. The bump in performance had nothing to do with the sugar in the drink and everything to do with the thoughts in our heads. In a study conducted by the Stanford psychologist Carol Dweck and her colleagues, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Dweck concluded the signs of ego depletion were observed only in those test subjects who believed willpower was a limited resource. It wasn't the sugar in the lemonade, but the belief in its impact that gave participants an extra boost. People who did not see willpower as a finite resource did not show signs of ego depletion. Many people still promote the idea of ego depletion, perhaps because they are unaware of the evidence that exists to the contrary. But if Dweck's conclusions are correct, then perpetuating the idea is doing real harm. If ego depletion is essentially caused by self-defeating thoughts and not by any biological limitation, then the idea makes us less likely to accomplish our goals by providing a rationale to quit when we could otherwise persist. Michael Inslich, a professor of psychology at the University of Toronto and the principal investigator at the Toronto Laboratory of Social Neuroscience, offers an alternative view. He believes that willpower is not a finite resource, but instead acts like an emotion. Just as we don't run out of joy or anger, willpower ebbs and flows in response to what's happening around us and how we feel. Seeing the link between temperament and willpower through a different lens has profound implications on the way we focus our attention. For one, if mental energy is more like an emotion than fuel in a tank, it can be managed and utilized as such. A toddler might throw a temper tantrum when refused a toy, but will, with age, gain self-control and learn to ride out bad feelings. Similarly, when we need to perform a difficult task, it's more productive and helpful to believe a lack of motivation is temporary than it is to tell ourselves we're spent and we need a break and maybe some ice cream. While we can stop believing our willpower is limited, our perception of willpower is just one facet of temperament. Several recent studies have found a strong connection between the way we think about other aspects of human nature and our ability to follow through. For example, to determine how in control people feel regarding their cravings for cigarettes, drugs, or alcohol, researchers administer a standard survey called the Craving Beliefs Questionnaire. The assessment is modified for the participant's drug of choice and presents statements like, "Once the craving for prescription opioids starts, I have no control over my behavior," or "The cravings for prescription opioids are stronger than my willpower," and "I'll always have cravings for prescription opioids." How people rate these statements tells researchers a great deal about not only their current state, but also how likely they are to remain addicted. Participants who indicate they feel more powerful as time passes increase their odds of quitting. In contrast, studies of methamphetamine users and cigarette smokers found that those who believed they were powerless to resist were most likely to fall off the wagon after quitting. This logic isn't surprising, but the extent of the effect is remarkable. A study published in the Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs found that individuals who believed they were powerless to fight their cravings were much more likely to drink again. Addicts' beliefs regarding their powerlessness was just as significant in determining whether they would relapse after treatment as their level of physical dependence. Just let that sink in. Mindset mattered as much as physical dependence. What we say to ourselves is vitally important. Labeling yourself as having poor self-control actually leads to less self-control. Rather than telling ourselves we failed because we're somehow deficient, we should offer self-compassion by speaking to ourselves with kindness when we experience setbacks. Several studies have found people who are more self-compassionate experience a greater sense of well-being. A 2015 review of 79 studies looking at the responses of over 16,000 volunteers found that people who have, quote, "a positive and caring attitude towards him or herself in the face of failures and individual shortcomings" tend to be happier. Another study found that people's tendency to self-blame, along with how much they ruminated on a problem, could almost completely mediate the most common factors associated with depression and anxiety. An individual's level of self-compassion had a greater effect on whether they would develop anxiety and depression than all the usual things that tend to screw up people's lives, like traumatic life events, a family history of mental illness, low social status, or a lack of social support. The good news is that we can change the way we talk to ourselves in order to harness the power of self-compassion. This doesn't mean we won't mess up. We all do. Everyone struggles with distraction from one thing or another. The important thing is to take responsibility for our actions without heaping on the toxic guilt that makes us feel even worse and can, ironically, lead us to seek out even more distraction in order to escape the pain of shame. Self-compassion makes people more resilient to letdowns by breaking the vicious cycle of stress that often accompanies failure. If you find yourself listening to that little voice in your head that sometimes bullies you around, it's important to know how to respond. Instead of accepting what the voice says or arguing with it, remind yourself that obstacles are part of the process of growth. We don't get better without practice, which can be difficult at times. A good rule of thumb is to talk to yourself the way you might talk to a friend. Since we know so much about ourselves, we tend to be our own worst critics. But if we talk to ourselves the way we'd help a friend, we can see the situation for what it really is. Telling yourself things like, "this is what it's like to get better at something," and "you're on your way," are healthier ways to handle self-doubt. Reimagining the internal trigger, the task, and our temperament are powerful and established ways to deal with distractions that start within us. We can cope with uncomfortable internal triggers by reflecting on, rather than reacting to, our discomfort. We can reimagine the task we're trying to accomplish by looking for the fun in it and focusing on it more intensely. Finally, and most important, we can change the way we see ourselves to get rid of self-limiting beliefs. If we believe we're short on willpower and self-control, then we will be. If we decide we're powerless to resist temptation, it becomes true. If we tell ourselves we're deficient by nature, we'll believe every word. Thankfully, you don't have to believe everything you think. You are only powerless if you think you are. Remember this. Reimagining our temperament can help us manage our internal triggers. We don't run out of willpower. Believing we do makes us less likely to accomplish our goals by providing a rationale to quit when we could otherwise persist.
What we say to ourselves matters.
Labeling yourself as having poor self-control is self-defeating. Practice self-compassion. Talk to yourself the way you talk to a friend. People who are more self-compassionate are more resilient.